Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Smiling at me, nothing but blue skies do I see. Blue birds singing a song, nothing but blue birds all day long. Never saw the sun shining so bright, never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by, when you're in love, my, how they fly. Blue days, all of them gone, nothing but blue skies from now on.
Another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark, and you are at the right place at the right time. I'd like to just take a moment to thank you for taking the time out to tune in once again to our program, where week in and week out, we bring you news and information that's culled from around mostly these United States. Sometimes we cross the borders and oceans, and we'll have guests that even go beyond these United States. It's news and information that we're proud to say you can use. It's news that is intended to inspire you and encourage you empower you and, well, of course, instill you to get involved and make a difference. We're not talking heads here. And certainly the topics and or guests that we bring you, they're not brought to you with a political or business interest. It's straight no chaser, as the term may go. In other words, it's unadulterated. And it's real news. It's news that truly you can put your hands around, you can vet, you can research. And I'm proud again to say that it's news that's real. So this evening, no exception. I'm really thrilled this evening especially because I have a couple of special guests, and then I have one guest that I really am going to enjoy because it's someone that's truly a friend and colleague of mine, and sometimes, whether she'll admit it or not, even a mentor. So we have a lot to talk about this evening. It's Mother's Day weekend. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there and the moms. And so we're going to have maybe a little bit of a discussion about that as well. For those of you who are on the mail list, then you probably have an idea, albeit just recently, because I did get my notice out just today, this afternoon, or actually even just this evening. But you know that we have a returning guest, both of our guests. And as always, they have much to share with us. So we're going to have some fun. Sit back, put on your seatbelt, because we do keep it real. We keep it live all the time. We'll open the lines up in case you'd like to participate in this uncommon discourse, as I like to call it. As I said, it's news for you, by you, and of you, because very often our subject matter and our guests come from you, the listener, and I'd like to continue to have that so and encourage you to continue to reach out to me and let me know if there are information or guests that need airtime because their message is not getting the attention it deserves. And you can do that by sending me an email to Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore, C-L-A-1-8, at msn.com. And we can have a discussion about who that person or those persons are and what the topic is. And certainly we can have a telephone conversation as well. And hopefully we'll be able to give them the airtime that they deserve. So with that said, again, happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. Happy Mother's Day to my own wife, who I'm so happy to say has done a fantastic job. And to my sisters and my mom, who has passed on, though I know every time I mention her, she's right here in my presence, and you all, I'm sure most of you at least, know what I'm talking about. I think she did a good job. Anyway, isn't laughter good, folks? You know, before we get off the air, I have to give a couple of antidotes, especially it being Mother's Weekend for the mothers out there. Just a couple of good things in terms of health and wellness. But as always, I like to give just something in the way of an economic insight. And recently I was talking about being aware of what you're ingesting and looking on the shelves and being sure to read the labels, because our watchdogs don't always watch over us as they should. And when I talk about our watchdogs, I'm talking about those agencies. The thing about an agency is the individuals in charge are often not elected. They're appointed. And often there's a political component to that. So I'm talking about your USDA, the FDA, the FCC. You know, these are agencies that are not always looking at our best. Even the CDC. We have to be very Center for Disease Control, the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, in case you don't know, FCC, Federal Communications Commission. I'll just stop right there. Federal Communications Commission. Think about what's being allowed to be on television today. And I'm not trying to be socialist. I'm not trying to be anti-socialist, but I just want to make sure that folks don't understand that, yeah, I believe in free speech, and I wouldn't want to be anywhere else than in these United States. But at the same time, I think it's important that we do have law enforcement. I do believe that if we did not have law enforcement, there would be a significant higher amount of crime. I do believe that we need to have agencies that are looking out for the people to ensure that businesses are not taking overly advantage of the citizens. And so I just believe that those watchdogs are not doing the job as well as they could. But that's another topic that we're going to be getting into more of. Right now, I see one of my special guests are actually on the air, so be remiss if I didn't want to get right to it. As I mentioned, we're having a couple of guests, and for those of you on the mail list, you know who they are. We have Dr. Eddie Taylor, who is a psychologist. He's an author and an educator himself. And he's going to be talking about the relative progress of blacks in America in the wake of the events over the past numerous years, with a special focus on how African Americans can move forward in a progressive way. He's also going to speak to his recent book that he just completed as well. But before we bring on Dr. Taylor, I'm pleased and thrilled and proud to bring on someone who's truly nothing less than a friend of mine, but a remarkable mind, brilliant thinker, and very progressive and active individual. And these are the times that I really, 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 really enjoy what I do when I can have, you know, my friends on and we can just have some good, uncommon discourse. I invite you to join in the dialogue. And the reach number is 347-838-9142 as we cover a gamut of subject matters. And so I bring to you Stephanie DeJeunesse. Ms. DeJeunesse, Stephanie, are you there?
Yes, I am, Daryl.
How are you doing? What a pleasure to hear your voice again and just talk with you. This is just fun. Now, this is when I do becomes extra fun. How are you?
Well, actually, I'm doing very well. I like to tell people I'm going on by grace, and I think these last few weeks I've been hobbling along by God's grace. I took a little bit of a spill on my stairs. Could have been a lot worse, but I sprained ligaments in my left knee. But healing is coming along nicely, and I'm getting rather adept at using a cane. So I've been looking on the bright side of things, but overall I thank God for just, you know, the ability to have mobility and to get around and still do some of the things that I want to do and need to do.
Well, you know what? I'm just going to stop for a moment because I know prayer works, and I'm just going to say just a quick brief prayer. Lord, just touch Stephanie as you have in the past. You've proven that she's someone that you intend to use, and have shown that through the works that she's brought forth in her community and communities beyond. So, Lord, just touch her with a special healing balm as only you can, and I know it's already done. In the name of Jesus, who I follow. And for those of you who may have other spiritual beliefs, as long as it's grounded in God, we're all serving the same one. But I just believe in Jesus Christ, and that's my belief. So whatever you believe in, as long as it's founded in love, say a special prayer for our friend Stephanie DeJeunesse. Stephanie, one thing I'll mention, and that is with regard to rebuilding ligaments and muscle, and chondroitin, and let's talk offline because I have some protocols. As you know, I'm a certified naturopath for the last 17 years. So there's some things you can do. But for our folks out there, if you like strain a muscle or a ligament, glucosamine and chondroitin does work. I've read the studies myself. The studies are not just coming out of naturopathic journals, but they're coming out of New England Journal of Medicine and Harvard Medical Review. You're seeing a lot of these things on the news. Also, you're seeing probiotics, things that you're just starting to see in the last 5 or 10 years things that I've been utilizing for the last 17 or 18 years, but they're beginning to hit mainstream, and the medical profession is beginning to see the benefit of alternative supplements. So definitely, Stephanie, let's talk offline. But vitamin C is one of the main things you'll want to do to increase healing. So I just uptake my vitamin C just a little bit. It seems like a simple thing, but it's low fruit.
Okay.
So, yeah, give me a buzz. We'll talk a little bit. So now that I've done that,
sounds
I had
good.
To do that, Stephanie, because you're an important
it.
Person to me.
I
was not
really
going to let that go.
It.
When you laid that on me, I was not going to let that go, even though I know we're going to talk offline. Now, you have done so much, and you're an educator, like I said. You had your own school and facility, and I know that you're doing different things now. There's so much I want to talk with you about. You've created so many different avenues for people to benefit. Your grandparents' forum, which was recognized statewide throughout the state of New Jersey, was a wonderful thing. In fact, you even blessed the residents, the senior citizen complex that I have the opportunity to be a program director over, and they love what you put together, your model for progressive understanding of the new grandparent. I love the way you laid that out. So I want to touch a little bit in this conversation about, and this is Mother's Weekend, Mother's Day weekend, so this will be great timing, about your perspective of the new motherhood. We have some younger listeners. Our listeners range from, you know, mid-20s up and beyond, you know, 50s and 60s. So we have a broad range of listeners. But what do you see, and I know you've done some research on this and you've spoken to it, in terms of the challenges now for our mothers as opposed to the challenges 20 or 30 years ago? And what are some of the things that, and I know we only have about 15 minutes because you spontaneously did this. By the way, I'm going to put you on the spot because you know I love you. I'm going to insist that you come back within the next 2 or 3 weeks because I you dropped the bombshell on me earlier, and I'm going to have to lay that one out too. So I'm going to put you on the spot and ask, would you be willing to, if we can coordinate our calendars, come back in the next 2 or 3 weeks? I don't want to see 4 weeks come and go, and we haven't had you back. Would you be willing to consider that?
Oh, of course, Daryl. You know that I will.
Okay,
thank you for inviting me back. So your question was basically the challenges of today's moms, mothers, versus maybe 20, 30 years ago.
30.
Your listeners, unless they know me personally, may find it interesting that I'm a mother who has mothered children for all intents and purposes in two different generations. My daughter will be 45 in July. My son will be 25 in October. So I can speak to that anecdotally from personal experience. And I'm a career educator. I've been teaching 47 years, somebody, something. And so really this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart because I have been watching the family over the course of decades. My own family is they use the term blended, but my husband had a previous marriage. I had a previous marriage. My husband adopted Aaliyah. He had a daughter from his previous marriage, so they are sisters by adoption, and then we have our son, Quinn, together. So if I look at the girls were our children born in the 70s, and there were certain things that you could do and not do. People talk about old school, new school, and the like. You could be strict with your children and not feel like the Division of Child Protection and Permanency was going to show up at your door. Whereas nowadays, it seems that many, many mothers are almost fearful of their children. And there seem to be so many more options that mothers are just dealing with. If they're working full-time and the extracurricular activities at school vying for time, we have young people today, they know nothing but high-tech, And so many of the things that were just very, very basic to family, meals together, going to church together, having family reunions and the like, it's not that they've gone the way of the dinosaur, but they may be less prevalent today. And as they are, we are seeing demise in the family. It's as simple as that. There are certain things I'm old school about, and I make no apologies for it. And I find that both my children are better off for it. My daughter had a failed first marriage, but she was able to survive it, I think, because of her family upbringing. And now she's right smack there in middle age, and you know she's living a life that's worthy of a Christian woman. That didn't just happen by chance. You know, our son is living a life that's commendable. And yet, as a mother, and I think this is another challenge, and then I'll let you ask another question. He's a black male in 21st century America. And our family is very cognizant of the fact that black males are under attack. So there are a lot of challenges today. It's just not easy. We need each other. We need not be ignorant. And we need to be committed to mothering, not only our own children, but other people's children, too. We have to pick up the slack.
You mentioned something that's interesting. You said we don't have the reunions. It's obvious statistically that we have more broken, call it broken families, but single parent families, and so that family unit isn't what it was on average some 20 or 30 years ago, or not to mention 40 years ago. And I wonder if that hasn't played a role, in addition to the technology, on the influence that external forces are playing on our families. And it may be more even the technology piece, because, you don't see a child, when I say child, a young person, without that device in their hand.
Oh, no, absolutely. People can barely walk across the street. It's amazing that, you're almost deemed to be strange if you ask people to check their cell phones at the door, because you want to have a family. You want to have a family event. I mean, it's crazy when you have people all sitting in the same room, multi-generations, because some of us in our 60s and our 40s, and even some people beyond my age in their 70s or so, they're pretty tech savvy, but everybody's on their phone instead of interacting with one another. And that's the thing that I think if we don't get back to what we're hardwired for, and what we're hardwired for is relationship. If we don't get back to relationships, we lose the essence of ourselves. And that's really, really critical. Something my family is doing this weekend, since, you brought the fact that this is Mother's Day weekend. Some people have moms who are with us. You mentioned that your mom is not, and I know you miss her dearly. I can say that. My dad's not with me. I miss him dearly. There isn't a day that I don't think about him, but I still have my mom. She'll be 87 in June. So she wanted to go to see Alvin Ailey. She has a lot of mobility problems. She also has Alzheimer's. And I knew that we weren't going to be able to pull that off. So we're calling our Mother's Day this year the next best thing. And so what I did is I went and got from the library an Alvin Ailey DVD. My daughter's coming up from the D.C. area, and her special someone is coming with her. His mother has been deceased for 10 years. My husband's mother has been deceased since 1985. So Quinn doesn't really know his paternal grandma. And after watching the Alvin Ailey DVD, I'm sure the men will be downstairs watching sports, then after dinner we're going to get together and talk about our moms and share special memories. And what's funny is my daughter just called a little while ago and she said, we want to know our assignment because we we want to be properly prepared. And so I guess that's the teacher in me. I said, you have to have at least one picture of your mom, and memories is plural. You have to share at least two memories of your mom. So we're kind of looking forward to that. Because I'm sure we'll laugh, and who knows, even if we shed a tear or two, that's okay as well.
That's a beautiful thing. And what you've shared, and it's interesting, as I'm doing the program from time to time, I find myself talking to the future because I know that there are folks listening right now who are in the archives, so it's kind of, you know, kind of strange. So to my archivist, you weren't able to call in and comment on this, but... And to our live listeners, isn't that wonderful to think about what Ms. Zizanev just said? I mean, just to come together as a family and come up with something progressive like that to help unify the family, having progressive discourse about the family, those things are so important. Our heritage are so important. It takes me to another point. Doesn't seem as though there's much emphasis on our heritage as it was when I was a kid, when 20, 30 years ago, a reunion was a common thing. Christmas come and go, and we haven't spent time at grandmom's. Are you kidding me? You know,
oh, yeah.
Years, and we haven't spent time. And so I don't hear about that as much. And I think it's important that we get back to some of the basics. I understand progress and evolution. Talk with me about it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. My paternal grandma, actually my middle name is Modesta, and I'm named after her, my dad's mother. She was born in Ponce, Puerto Rico. I grew up in the 1950s, and at that time, you didn't put out your Puerto Rican flag. It was kind of a melting pot. She had married my grandpa, who was a merchant seaman, and grandpa spoke five languages. So obviously grandma was fluent in Spanish. Grandpa was fluent not only in Spanish, but, you know, Portuguese and German and English and French and so forth. So growing up, I lived in a four-family house, and grandma insisted that my father and her other son spoke Spanish. And these are black men, you know, really coming of age, working as civil servants in the 40s and the 50s and so forth. But when it came to my generation, my cousin and I, we refused to learn Spanish. Now I'm working very hard at trying to get it in my older age. But my family likes to hear me say this, la familia es la cosa principal. Es muy importante. You know, so sometimes, you know, they'll say, tell us in Spanish. But basically it's, the family is the principal thing. It's very, very important. And I know my grandmother was big on that, big on legacy. You need to know your name. You need to know your ancestors and who brought who over and, you know, all of that kind of conversation. It needs to be around the table, and you need to know what's what. And as I mentioned, my mom has Alzheimer's, and my grandmother, her mother, passed away of Alzheimer's. It can be a very long and winding road. But we want my mom to hear how her grandchildren and her only daughter adore her now, while she can process what we're going to be saying to her. I don't know what memories we're each going to bring up, but she made fabulous memories with us through our childhood and earlier decades. She needs to hear that now, especially while she can relish what we're saying. So what I would advise all of us to do is to take time and to fortify relationships. There may be some listeners who are angry with mom or angry with grandmom. Forget about it. Life is too short. And anger just poisons us. It's toxic. it makes our lives noxious, and we've got to get rid of that kind of stuff. Reconciliation brings peace, and it brings joy. And even if mom is not with you anymore, then forgive her in your own mind, and think about some good thing that she taught you or she did with you, because there's not one of us that's perfect, and there's not one of us that's, you know, like totally evil, like we don't do anything right. So, you know, the family is so very important, and we need to cherish the treasure of it, not just Mother's Day weekend or Father's Day weekend, but really take time. Even when we think we don't have it, we need to take time.
Speaking of time, let's talk a little bit about some of what you've been doing. You have something coming up on the horizon that you were sharing with me. I'd be remiss if I didn't put you on the spot and bring it up, but I have to, because
okay. Well, I'm going to. I'm chuckling a little bit. I have a friend that says you take a backward glance and a forward stride. So I'm going to take a backward glance, because you said, what have I been doing? Well, since January the 8th, 2017, I've been really trying to be the best caregiver I could be for my husband, who had a heart transplant. And that very serious operation culminated about, almost 22 years of episodes with advanced heart failure. So I can tell listeners that no amount of pre-transplant classes can prepare the organ recipient or the primary caregiver for what goes on. It's really quite a journey, but things are much, much better now, and I'm very grateful. The forward stride is this. After some encouragement from a friend of mine, I am re-releasing my book, which is called What God Can Do, with a slice of bread and a teaspoon of peanut butter, and it's a memoir of what it took for us to start our school from the humble beginnings of $250. So we incorporated in June of 2004. Our school, New Covenant Christian Academy, opened in September of 2006. We stayed open for 7 years, and then in 2013 there were some rather unforeseen and some would say unfortunate circumstances, but God worked everything together for good ultimately. But what the book talks about is really what that 2-year journey was to start the school, the first year that the school was open. And then in this re-release of the book, I've added an afterword and a photo gallery. So I'm pretty excited about it coming out again, and meeting up with some of the students that have left our halls, and they're now in college. Some of them are in high school, and we hope to get together again when I do at least one book signing that'll encompass a reunion-type aspect.
So the book titled, again, What God Can Do
with a slice of bread and a teaspoon of peanut butter. And, of course, I get into that in the book. There is something to that.
Okay.
There is something to that, but oftentimes I'll just call the book.
I can't wait till we get into that.
Yeah, oftentimes I just call the book for short, What God Can Do, because that really is what the book is about. So, but the slice of bread and teaspoon of peanut butter is symbolic.
Okay, and that was going to be my next question without getting into it, because I can't wait for these next 2 or 3 weeks to come by so we can really kind of get down into it. And it'll be available online, is that?
Well, actually, it's going to print. It should be the beginning of next week. I was talking to the publisher, and as I said, I've been doing a lot of primary caregiving around here. So as far as the marketing of the book right now, we know we're going to sell it through our organization website. I have started some preliminary conversations with Jesus Book and Gift you know, the one that's in Greenbrook. Beyond that, I'm not quite sure, but by the time I get back on, I'll probably have more information about that.
Okay, well, that's fantastic, and we're certainly going to promote it because I know it's more than sort of a diary of, you know, what's happened in your lifetime. I know you enough to know that it's a message for others to learn from and be motivated by. Am I right, or am I?
I think you're right, because honestly, I was allowing the previous edition to die a slow death in my bottom file cabinet drawer. I only had one copy left, and I said the school is closed. It was a heartbreaking situation. There's no reason to run any more of these books. There's no reason to market this book. But then someone read it and really encouraged me and said that you need to get this out again. And it is really more than just a memoir about opening a Christian school. It's a story of faith. It's a story of how two ordinary people can be used of God to do something that they never thought they could do, something extraordinary for his benefit and the benefit of the kingdom and the blessing of others. So that's really why I entertained doing an afterword and re-releasing it.
A story of faith. I like that. That could almost be a subtitle.
Well,
what
our life has really been
a slice of bread, peanut butter, colon, a story of faith.
Oh, you're
going to
add even more
to your title.
Oh my gosh, you're going to add even more to it. You're going to add even more to it. Well, I have to tell you, it took a lot of faith to just say, "Okay, God, are you going to bring a donor heart?" To my husband, many people die while waiting on the, you know, different organ transplant list, but certainly heart. And he was privileged to get the heart of a 46-year-old man. So I call him Mr. Well, actually, he was the 972nd heart transplant out of the 1,000 that Newark Beth Israel just recently celebrated. So I call him Mr. 972-7146, and he's the 972nd transplant. He's now 71 years old, and actually he got a 46-year-old heart. So anyway, it's really pretty amazing, you know, that he's walking around with somebody else's heart. It's amazing.
That is amazing. I mean, that's just I'm always amazed when I think about what the medical profession is doing. You know, as much as I believe in holistic medicine, I certainly have absolute respect for what the medical profession is doing.
Yeah, no, it has its place. Quinn himself has a very, very dramatic testimony, because in 1995 he was 48 at the time. That's when he had his first heart attack, and actually he was dead for 12 minutes. And our son was only 20 months old at the time, and I knew, well, you know, these folks are either going to bring him back to life. So they, you know, use the defibrillator once, twice, three times. Normally they give up after the third time and, you know, come and deliver the bad news. But the person went in the fourth time and brought him back to life. But that's what irreparably damaged his heart and put him on that very, very long journey of advanced heart failure, really, for the next 22 years. His heart was just severely damaged in that episode and very badly compromised. But for, what, 2 decades, the medical profession just managed him so well. You know, yes, he had to exercise, but there were various medications, you know, that he had to take to keep him going until finally, you know, what was left of his original heart wasn't enough, and, you know, he had to go on the transplant list. So, you know, we just thank God for his goodness to us and his grace, and, you know, we keep moving on.
Yeah, and the book is so apropos, as I said, the subtitle being so important, and I'm courageous to put in the subtitle, A Story of Faith. It's so important. I guess I just want to reach out to all the listeners who are going through something. And I think it's to some degree, we all are.
Everybody is. Yeah, everybody is, really. It doesn't matter whether it's your own health, the health of someone you know, the loss of a job, the, you know, chaos and confusion that might be going on, you know, in one's church congregation. It just goes on and on. Stuff happens. Life happens. And, you know, we need to be keepers of our souls. And one of the main things that we do is to draw nigh to God in faith so that we can get the direction that we need to get. I do, on the subject of this husband of mine, he has a pretty strict schedule in terms of when he has to take his meds and when he has to eat dinner. We eat dinner between 7 and 7:30, so I'm going to have to run so I can get dinner on the table, okay?
Oh, this has been such a pleasure, such a joy. We certainly appreciate you, and I'm going to be reaching out to you in the next couple of days, Stephanie.
Okay, and it'll be my privilege to come on again. Okay.
Tell everyone
Thanks a lot, Daryl.
Hello. You take care.
Thank you,
Stephanie.
All right. God bless
Bye-bye.
Now. Bye.
God bless. Mm-hmm. Happy Mother's Day. So that was a treat. All right. I'd say, as you all did not expect, perhaps, because Miss Dejeuness is truly a friend that goes back many, many years. And I didn't intend for the conversation to go that long because she did tell me she had a very tight schedule with her family, as she just expressed with her husband and what they're going through. So again, I ask that you keep Miss Dejeuness in prayer. And she has a lot to offer. We look forward to her book that's coming out, and I believe it's titled What God Can Do with a Slice of Bread and a Teaspoon of Peanut Butter. And, of course, I subtitled it A Story of Faith, how she was able to, with a humble beginning of just a few hundred dollars, start a Christian school and make a difference in the lives of so many. So if you have that thought, that inkling, just know that that thought, that inkling, probably be beyond what you may be thinking in terms of its source. You know, there's a universal source. My good friend and mentor Dick Gregory used to say all the time to millions of others, there is a universal God. Regardless of your specific a denomination of belief, there's a universal God. There's a spirit. And with that, I encourage you, if you have a thought that you're considering or it's been on your mind, think about it and then just take one little step towards making it happen. You'll be surprised. Another step may just find itself taking place to move you in that direction. So, speaking of moving in a direction, as I mentioned earlier in the program, you know, our key special guest this evening is going to be Dr. Eddie Taylor. Of course, he's a friend of Progressive News Weekly. And we had started a dialogue, I guess it's been within the year, on moving the black community forward. Dr. Taylor, just for those of you who are new to the radio program, because if you've heard Dr. Taylor, because he's been on many, many times, we don't have many, many months go by and he doesn't come back and share some enlightening information with us. Dr. Taylor is a psychologist. He's an author. He's an educator. He's an, I would say he's a humanitarian above all. And he's done an enormous amount of research on the challenges and the opportunities that have occurred over time in the African-American community especially and within our society. And so he doesn't just focus on the ills and issues of problems, but he focuses on solutions. And so this evening, he's going to talk just a little bit, just sort of a precursor to an upcoming interview that he'll have, because he's actually traveling. He's so gracious to just take a few moments out this evening in his travels. I think he's probably waiting for a flight right now, to just share with us some of his latest research. And we're going to continue the series that we had begun some time ago, which was based on his previous book, The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revitalization, or actually it's The Revival of Black America. And that's an excellent read at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, that you'll want to get your hands on. But now he has a follow-up research book, How to Move Black America Forward. So without further ado, I want to bring to the airwaves Dr. Eddie Taylor. Dr. Taylor, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly.
All right, Darrell Clark, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well this Mother's Day weekend. Happy Mother's Day to your mother of your lovely children. And I wish you to have a happy and enjoyable Mother's Day weekend. So, Dr.
Yeah,
Taylor, you've been
it.
Busy. Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah.
You've been busy as always.
Yeah, we've been trying to do the things we can to help our people in the midst of all that's going on. But I do definitely, first of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be on the show and to speak with you and your listeners. It's an honor, always an honor and a privilege to be able to speak to you and your listeners.
It's truly our pleasure, and it's reciprocated, no question about it. You know, I was just mentioning that we've been working on a series that's an offshoot to the research you've done, which your book is based on, The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revival of Black
yes.
America. And I just wanted to make sure that our listeners understand that we are moving forward with that effort. This is not a talking heads effort. This is not about just a read before sleep and move on. This is about action. This is about a crucial, critical time, as you so often say, that is taking place in our society within a specific sect of, and that's S-E-C-T for section, of our society,
mm-hmm.
that being the African-American, Black Americans. And it's
yes.
a very serious situation, and I so admire you for the efforts that you have taken place to bring this to the forefront, because so many people, Dr. Taylor, they just don't seem to get it. I mean, I'm in circles and professional circles and social circles, and I believe, and I need you to comment on this, because I know you don't have much time, but I got to stop for a moment. I need you to comment on this, Doc, because you're a psychologist, and you've done the research on this, and this is near and dear to you, but it just
yes.
seems as though people have lost, and specifically in the African-American community and those that appreciate the African-American community, because going all the way back to the Underground Railroad, let's not be fooled here, there were those outside
mm-hmm.
of the African-American community that assisted the African-American community to move forward. And there were those that within the African-American community that were putting hurdles up with regard to moving the African-American community forward. So just wanted to put that
mm-hmm.
as a backdrop to this statement slash question. It just
okay.
appears right now in this crucial time of mankind in the
mm-hmm.
African-American community, especially the African-American community, and we can expound on this on a worldwide basis in terms of African-based individuals. But in America, it seems as though there's been a shift in mindset over the last 50 years where there isn't a movement taking place to move the African-American community forward, as though we, generally speaking, have a subconscious of we're okay.
Right.
Talk with me about, is it just me? And I've talked with a few people who say, yeah, Daryl, it just seems that way. I mean, you know, there are folks now that, you know, they're driving their decent cars. So we've kind of forgot that there is a number of people that are really suffering and are really having issues. Can you just speak to that, if you would, in some of the short time we have?
Sure. There are quite a few things. One is in reference, and I'll go all the way back to slavery, 1863, with the Emancipation Proclamation, there were many African Americans, black people at the time, who felt that we were free, we've made it, you know, everything is done and settled. However, what we did not realize for some of us was that in Texas, there were some of our people were still enslaved, and it wasn't until June 19, 1865 that they were then freed. And so whereas one part of the country may feel that everything's okay, it is never, for us, it's never acceptable to be all right until we're all on the same level. So we may have some that are educated, some who are doing well financially, some who may be doing well in their environment, their social status, but it's not until we're all on the same level together. Because although we may be doing good individually, when people look at us, they may see us the same way they see the masses. And if they see the masses in a deprived state, if they see the masses in a lower class, it does not matter how much you've accomplished in life. They will still see all black people in the same category. And it's not until we're able to lift everyone up collectively that we can say that we're making progress, significant progress. And these are some of the issues that we're having. And yes, sir.
Yeah. That's the point that I was trying to get to. Until everyone is lifted, we're perceived. Now, I want to stop there. We're perceived by cultures, other races, the world. When you say we're perceived as still being less than, because it's a global society now, what are you referring to?
I'm referring, and we can expand it to globally, because when we have YouTube, we have internet television, internet radio, we have all of that. And so what happens in America is actually it goes throughout. And so it's not just an American thing. If we're recognized as being African American or black American, or we're from America, we're categorized and we're placed in this group where we are not significant. We're not equivalent to the general man. And so these are some of the problems and challenges that we have. It's not until black people in this country can all be able to stand together and be recognized as being men and women that not only do we deserve respect, but we've earned respect. The work that we've done in this country, the labor, the blood that has been shed, all of that, for the sake of this country, for the sake of our citizenship, for the sake of our rights, not only human rights, not only civil rights, but also human rights. And so these are things that not only the United States need to understand, but the world globally need to understand as well. Because when people look at black people from America, they look at us as being deprived and being less than. And sometimes you'll hear when they have these global summits or these G8 summits, they had on several occasions racial reconciliation, racial concerns, racial equality on a national level. And on all of these levels, it's rare. Well, not rare. It's never been publicized, never been recognized for the United States to be present. So throughout the presidents of the United States, and we can probably go back as far as anyone wants to, but they've never been able to go to a worldwide global summit to say that race relations in this country has been resolved. They're never able to say that. You know, even 8 years ago, 12 years ago, we were not able to send a representative from Washington, D.C., the president, vice president, whoever the case may be, to say that racial issues have been addressed, because we still have in this country a high number of African Americans who are unemployed, a high number of African Americans who are incarcerated, a high number of African Americans who are dealing with homicide, a high number of African Americans who are dealing with law enforcement brutalizing our people. So therefore, they cannot justly say that race relations in this country has been resolved. And so what they do show through the media is that when there's homicide, they call it justifiable homicide. And they try to justify it because they show us as being crooks and criminals. They show us as not being worthy of respect. And it's not until we're able to show the decency that lies within all of us that we'll be able to get the respect that we deserve in this country and throughout the world. And as a matter of fact, I think it was a couple of years ago, Oprah Winfrey, billionaire Oprah Winfrey, went to a store. They didn't care who she was, but she was recognized as some other black person, some other black lady that didn't deserve their time and didn't deserve to be in their store. And so sometimes we lose and we miss the point, we miss the mark, that because we're educated, we're, you know, we have some financial means, we're doing well on our own, but it's not until we reach back and help someone else that it really makes a difference.
Wow, I was just going to go into some of the underlying statistics to support what you were saying, because you said that we have a perception that we are less than. But then you've answered my question before I ask, which is based on, and you just said, based on unemployment compared to, there's a distinct difference when you look at the statistics of African Americans. And what I like to do, if I may, is to distinguish African Americans from other minorities. I'm speaking of Latinos and the Asians here in America. Of course, the Asians don't have that problem, but our Latino brothers and sisters have similar problems. When we actually just carve out the African Americans in this country and look at the unemployment rate compared to others, the homicide rate, the incarceration rate, the health, overall health rate, educational rate, the statistics bear it out that we are disproportionately behind all other races. Now, that's the statistics that I have come across. Yourself, Dr. Taylor, the same?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything that's positive, the black community is behind. Everything that's negative, we're in the front.
You know, so that speaks to that. There are those that would say, oh, here's Dr. Taylor, and I don't think there are many, but I think that there are those that would say, well, Dr. Taylor's, here he goes, beating that horse again. And that's why I think it's important that people need to see what this is based on. I mean, you know, get the head out of the sand, stop being a victim of propaganda, and when I say propaganda, the propaganda that shows that, you know, it's not as bad as it may seem. You know, those who are incarcerated, they're criminals, they're bad people. There's more rich black people today than ever before in the history of mankind. You know, all those distractions that are designed to take our focus away from the disproportionate ills that exist in the African American community. And I literally take my hat off to you for what you're doing to consistently, persistently bring this to the fore for not just African Americans, but for everyone. Because as I said, that Underground Railroad was not all black. There was some white conductors along the way. And
Absolutely.
So there are those who, being educated, will get on that bandwagon And I think it's going to be a part of the movement, in fact. But at the core of the movement, we have to have that concern for ourselves,
yes,
for others to truly want to get involved. And so that's what I love about what you're doing. I know you have a short time frame to be with us, and I really appreciate you taking the time out while you're in the midst of travels. So I want to just touch upon a little bit about the book, because I probably don't have but about 5 minutes, and you're going to have to get ready to get on a plane. You went from The Day the Crabs Got Out, and I love the read. Folks, I'm not just trying to patronize Dr. Taylor. I don't play that with my guests. He has a read that's been researched, and we need to read it. Every person that's told me they read the book loved the book. In fact, I was talking with a colleague of mine, and I didn't even know he had read the book or that he had heard you on one of the programs. And we were having a meeting. It's the civic organization I'm a member of. And we were just talking about solutions in the black community because we have a mentor program for children. And I said to them, you know, I'm looking forward to working with Dr. Taylor for if anyone has heard him on my show. And a couple of folks said, oh, yeah, Dr. Taylor, the one who wrote The Day the Crabs Got Out, loved the book. So, you know, I'm just telling the readers it's a quick read. Relatively speaking, it's not like it's 400 pages. I don't know. It's a relatively quick read. You know, if it's 100 pages, it's a lot. If it's that many, but yet it's packed. Gets right to the of what you're trying to say by that title, The Day the Crabs Got Out, the revival of Black America. But you went there and you talked about solutions. That's what I love about the book. You came up with solutions to say, okay, here's what we need to do. First of all, let's get out this barrel. And everyone knows, I hope, what that term means. It's been around for eons, the crabs in a barrel. We all know that. Boy, they're just like crabs in a barrel. They can't help themselves for being at each other. And I think we've all experienced that. In my 25 years in corporate America, I've had to bring lawsuit for discrimination, which, you know, because of settlement, was acknowledged. But if I had not, it would have gone on. In other words, if I had said, well, I guess just the way it is, I guess I have to just deal with this. You know, white you get flight and black you get back. You know, but I wasn't raised that way. So the point that I'm making is in all of those complaints that I've had in those 25 years, or three or four, there were two or three that were complaints of my own brethren or sisterin. So, I mean, I think it's important that we be aware of the crab in a barrel situation in terms of us moving forward, which takes me to my whole point of where I was headed. Follow-up book, How to Move Black America Forward. From what I was reading, it has a sort of a different perspective, both critically important for the advancement of African America, but a little bit of a different approach from an approach of here's what we have going for us that we need to really emphasize, as opposed to these are some things we need to be aware of and we need to make sure we don't bring that with us, more in the day the crabs got out. And that's how I perceived it, but I'm talking with the author now. We haven't talked in a little while because I know you've been very busy in your travels and changing locations, relocating. So tell me, am I in the ballpark? And I know we don't have much time, but how did you transition from Day the Crabs Got Out to, and 100,000 feet, because I know you don't have much time, to How to Move Black America Forward? What was your thought?
The thought is essentially, what do we need to do to move forward? You know, from the bottom, from those, the boots on the ground level, from those who are actively involved in the city, engaged in seeing the bloodshed and hearing the police sirens, what do we need to do? What do we need to understand that's happening? And so we look at that from that perspective. So it's not from one area, from the day the crabs got out, there are organizations that are presently actively involved. However, from this perspective, it's not just looking at the organizations, but it's every single individual that's within the black community. What we have done, what we should be proud of, what we have accomplished. and the strength and energy that we have within our community, how that's being used against us and how we can actually use that to benefit our people.
Wow. So clear. Dr. Taylor, what I'd like to do as part of our series, expounding on the importance of organizations that have been in place, not reinventing the wheel, organizations that have been in place specifically to move Black America forward, and now you're bringing on that perspective of the individual. What a balance. So I would like to combine the how to move Black America forward concept with the day the crabs got out concept in terms of moving forward with our series, which we are going to do, by the way. And I'm looking forward to getting some of notable individuals representing numerous of these organizations, the fraternities, the sororities, the civic community organizations, our churches, and then have that discourse with those who are basically just grassroots. I believe folks need to understand that everyone wasn't in an organization during the movement. I mean, there were probably a majority of individuals who supported the direction that was brought forth from many organizations. But there were those grassroots individuals that I think really brought the emphasis forward. Though all those that marched were not in the NAACP or SNCC or the ACLU any of the other various organizations that really were at the forefront, they were supporters. And so I think with what you've brought forth now was that glue that will bring it all together. And so I'd like to go forward and pick up on this series and encourage the listeners to read, pick up the book. So when we have you back, we can expound on this. And I know you and I are talking about doing a series and maybe even take it on the road, hopefully, as they say, a town near you, folks, listeners. So I'd like for you all to drop me an email to Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore C-L-A-R-K, excuse me, Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, underscore C-L-A, 18, at CLA 18 at MSN.com, and let me know your thoughts on this, because in the weeks ahead, we're going to revisit this with some significant motivation and momentum. Dr. Taylor, again, I know that your time is precious right now. You're trying to pull things together. I appreciate you taking the time while you're traveling. I wish you and yours safe travels this weekend to and from where it is that you're traveling to and from. And let's follow up next week. And I'm hoping that within the next couple of weeks, you can come back and we'll put out significantly in advance what it is that you're doing through the research behind How to Move Black America Forward and the Day the Crabs Got Out, which could be a precursor to one of the first town halls that perhaps we can do. And maybe that could be a traveling thing. I admire you for what you're doing in this area. It's so crucially needed. I really believe we are in a dire state in terms of African Americans, this isn't some isolated, bigoted approach. As you heard me quote many times over the many years, Martin Luther King stated, in a real sense, and I'll close on this one with you because you're probably there waiting to run to the air, to the plane. In a real sense, all life is interrelated. This is Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes.
In a real sense, all life is interrelated. All men are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. Tied in a single garment of desire, whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be, and you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. called the interrelated structure of reality. So it's not as though they're just caring about themselves. This is all a part of the whole. And so if African-American community isn't brought up to be all that it can be, everyone ends up suffering. I used to have on my desk, if you're a racist, would you not allow a black who came up with the cure for cancer to provide his or her cure to save the life of a loved one? You see, so we have to think more broadly. And I love what you have in your book, one of the chapters. It was something about black. Was it Black and Proud or Proud to Be Black?
Yes.
Was
proud
it Proud
to be black.
Black, I think? Proud to
yes.
be Black, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's almost scary. Folks are scared to be black.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So on that note, laughter's good. On that note, Dr. Taylor, congratulations on your new book, How to Move Black America Forward by Eddie Taylor, PhD. Congratulations. I certainly appreciate it. And I did see my name mentioned. I appreciate you mentioning Progressive News Weekly in the intro. Thank you so much. We appreciate
you so much,
Dr. Taylor. Safe travels to you. Let's touch base in the next few days, you know, before middle of next week, and plan on how we're going to move forward. Hopefully you'll be able to come back, perhaps maybe as soon as before the end of the month, but certainly by the early part of next month, and let's get some momentum around this and really move forward with some action behind a great, what I think is a great, great model.
That sounds great. Yeah, but I'll be in touch with you, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your program again.
No problem. Did you want to leave any reach information or how a person can get your book or before you catch your flight?
Yes. You can reach me at eddietaylorphd.com. My book is also available on the website. It's eddietaylorphd.com, and also it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. That's
the
How to Move Black America Forward. And so, again, How to Move Black America Forward, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble's, and EddieTaylorPhD.com.
Thank you so much. Well, until we talk soon, again, safe travels and enjoy your weekend. That is Dr. Eddie Taylor we've been talking with, psychologist, author, educator, humanitarian, and true advocate for society and especially African American. So that concludes another edition of Progressive News Weekly. I thank you all for taking the time out to tune in to another edition. Listen, it's Mother's Day weekend. So tell a mother, whether it's your own mom or someone that is near and dear to you, let them know that you care about them. Tell someone that you love, you do love them. With that said, tell someone about Progressive News Weekly. If you join the program late, you really, 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 you really have got to go back to the archives. We had Ms. Stephanie Desjardins, educator, humanitarian, motivational speaker, speaking on motherhood and moving forward in society and the differences between motherhood today, especially in the minority communities, and motherhood 30 and 40 years ago, and the things that we can do to revitalize that progression that we had many, many days, years ago, decades ago. And then we had Dr. Eddie Taylor, our own Dr. Eddie Taylor, psychologist, author, educator, who highlighted his latest book, How to Move Black America Forward. And so you can get information from him at DrEddieTaylorPhD.com. And his book is also at Barnes & Noble and at Amazon.com. And so, again, until the next time that we meet, I wish you well, I wish you peace, and I wish you love. So take care. Tell someone about Progressive News Weekly, and be well. God bless.